So I would I'd like to continue where we left off, which was we were talking about the relationship of the started to outline sort of the three opinions and their relationship to the to what aspect of the sukkah they were relating to. So Rava was clearly relating to the schach. It was very clear to me that Rava is relating to the defanos. And the reason he's, I want to just repeat this, I may have said this at the end of Shir, somebody was challenging me about this. The reason I think that Rava's relating to the Defanos is because the Gova HaSukkah has no relevance to what the Schach is. The Gova HaSukkah, what gives the Sukkah its height, are the walls. Number one. That's the primary point. The second point, which is not a proof, but it is an indication anyway of sort of think the obvious thought path, is that Tosfos, and we're gonna when we sort of finish doing all the work in the sugya, the last thing I would like to do is the bottom Tosfos on Beis HaMelech, which is really the maybe it's the only Tosfos of significant sort of halacha conceptual substance really in the sugya. But Tosfos comments that this requirement that something be potentially arai but doesn't actually have to be arai can be keva. I mean, you can build a sukkah with mechitzo shel barzel. And you can have, you have a sukkah where the walls are really kavua. I don't know if anybody here has it. We don't have this. But some people have, when they build their house in their, one of their, whether it's a dining room itself or some other room on the edge of the house, they have a retractable roof, which during sukkahs, they might put schach on. That binyan outside the schach is about as keva as you're going to get. It's 100% kosher. Right? Why? As long as it's not 20 amos tall from the floor to where you put the schach, so it's perfectly fine. But the schach itself, you can't, if you take off your roof and then you pull out the 2x4s and you nail them in next to one another, as Tosfos points out, geshamim is a simen klala b'chag. There's a very funny comment in the Torah. The Torah, in the opening section of Hilchos Sukkah, says that the reason why we sit in the sukkah during Sukkos and not during Pesach, even though that's when the Jews left Egypt and when God put them in Sukkos, is because if you sat in the sukkah Pesach time, nobody would think to ask why. It'd be obvious why, because it's beautiful weather out. You sit in the sukkah. But during the fall, when it's raining, so that's a good time to sit in the sukkah. So yes and no. We don't sit in the sukkah during the rainy season. It's not supposed to rain during sukkah. It's supposed to rain several weeks later, because geshamim is a simen klala b'chag, and the first rains normally don't come sukkah time. I mean, probably if Sukkot is very late in the solar calendar year, obviously the rains do not follow the lunar calendar, they follow the solar calendar. So anyway, but so it's very, I don't know quite to do with that Torah, because it's not supposed to rain during Sukkot, it's supposed to rain after Sukkot. But, be that as it may, Tosfos says that how could geshamim be a simen klala b'chag? Just build your roof in such a way that it keeps the rain out. Well, the answer is you can't, because that would be keva. Ah, but it's a roof that's roi to be arai. The answer is it doesn't matter. The schach of a sukkah has to be arai. The walls, so they have to be roi. The shear has to be roi to be arai. So the third approach of in the Gemara of Rava's approach relates to the defanos, doesn't relate to the schach itself. There is an oddity that no one that I saw comments on. Supposing I have the following construction. And I don't know, maybe Rava would say this. Let's say I build sukkah with walls 30 amos tall. But instead of putting the schach on the top of the walls, I recess the schach. Inside I build a stick a little bit. There I have 2x4s jutting out around, and then I put my poles on that. So the schach is below 20 amos. But the walls, like the Empire State Building. So, better than Ashtaros Karnayim. Well, actually, I don't know how tall Ashtaros Karnayim were, but something like that. So, what is the din in that case? Hello?
What if you see it's similar, certainly to the case of Sukkot and Sukkot? And the whole sort of the fact that you have a radio covering on top of it?
What are we talking about? Sukkot Gabi Sukkot now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe the whole sort by that is the fact that you're blocking the top of the Sukkot. Since that's not the case, maybe it's okay.
So I'm going to reject your answer, but thank you for asking the question, because you've given me the answer anyway, which is I believe in the sukkah gabe sukkah cases. If the bottom sukkah is, if the schach, top schach is within, I thought within 20 amos of the bottom schach, I thought that it's good. But now I'm just thinking, is that really true? Does it say that? The sugya that Hillel is referring to is later in the first parak. It's not on our Mishnah. It's on the Mishnah of Sukkah Tachas Ha'ilan. And it's on the bottom of Tesser Beis, top of Yiram and Aleph. What's the case that the Tachtona... El Yonah Ksher et Tachtona Psula. Both of them Atzilasim Rechamasim. Mekayme El Yonah Besoch Esrim of what? That's the question. Oh, Rashi says, Lagaga Shel Tachtona. Dehu Karki Isa De El Yonah. So Rashi, so you, here you have a case. Not quite my case, but I would argue is maybe the same thing, where the walls are more than 20 amos tall. But what you have is you have a lower schach, which is the floor of the upper sukkah, and then you have an upper schach. And Rashi says, if it's within 20 amos of the lower schach, even though it's not within 20 amos of the ground, meaning on the walls, if the walls are 25 amos tall, and the schach is right near the top, and the lower sukkah, the floor, or the schach of the lower sukkah was at 8 amos, it's only 18 amos, or... 17 amos above, the top sukkah is kshera, which means that the top sukkah has very strong walls. So at the end of the day, the assumption is that you could have built that sukkah with walls that just ran from the floor to the ceiling, and if those walls could have been made arai, because they're less, they would only need to be 20 amos tall, so it's kosher. In my case, you would say simply, you know, the principle where you would view the top parts of the walls if they were cut off because they were relevant, and since the schach is below 20 amos and those walls are below 20 amos, it's fine. No? The riff? It's not fair on my part. I'm being mean. I'll just say the following. You didn't even look at that Gemara, probably. You just looked at it now. That Gemara, the riff, brought that as a raya, but he didn't explain it. And the Baal HaMor, it's the first time I've ever seen a Baal HaMor. We're going to do this when we're sort of finishing, when we've done the Irvin and the Yushalmi, then we're going to look at, there's a riff and a Baal HaMor and a Mochamos and a long Ravid. And for the first time that I've ever seen, the Baal HaMor agrees with the riff. There's only one point he challenges the riff on. He doesn't see where the riff's raya is from this sugya. But the riff, and then the Ramban explains what he thinks the raya was. The Ran quotes the Ramban, but it's both in the Mochamos and in the Ran himself quotes. So that's who says. Okay, the Ravid probably, the Baal HaMor probably agreed with you, even though he didn't really argue on the riff. I don't know what the Ravid, I don't know exactly the Ravid held. All I know is the Ravid held whatever the Baal HaMor didn't hold. That's what the Ravid held. That's a general claw. Yeah, I know.
Isn't a simple answer to your case what a sukkah is? Because when you say a sukkah, as you said, the sukkah is referring to the schach, not to the entire structure. Then if the schach itself is below 20 amos, then you're fine. But if we're saying that the sukkah is made up of different components and the defunders are also considered part of the sukkah, then no, it doesn't matter if the schach is below the 20 amos point, the whole composite of the sukkah itself would be violating the law.
Okay, so you're thinking conceptually, and I don't like doing that in the sense of I want to start with the known data points. Now, you're telling me in the abstract this is how we might construct things. What you really should be doing is saying that, Rebbe, you're wrong. You said that Rav is all about the Defanos. But in fact, if the data would suggest that the Sukkah's Kshera, even though the Defanos are more than 20 amos tall, then you see it's not really about the Defanos.
I said that yesterday.
No, but you didn't give a good explanation, right? Now I've given you that. But the way you should be thinking really is challenging my entire premise. I'm not actually bothered by the premise because I think that basically, when we talk about the sukkah, we talk about the walls that run from the floor to the schach. Why? Because you don't really need walls below or walls above. I think that's the simple understanding. So there's no question the Defanos play a role in the sukkah. You require Defanos. That's not a question. We're arguing about the nature of the Defanos. So I'm still going to stand by the fact that I think Rava right now, in other words, the way a sukkah is constructed is you have Defanos and you put schach on top of the Defanos. If your crazy Rebbe decides that he wants to build the walls up beyond that so they look Ashkenayim, that's not really part of the sukkah. Because right? If you chop that away, it would make no difference. So in terms of making a cheshbon of how big the sukkah is, and is it a shear that's roi lios arai, all we look at is the sukkah, which means the defanos from the floor to the schach.
Why? Why not above?
Because it's totally unnecessary to have those. They're not part of the hechsher sukkah. If a massive circular saw blade came flying through the air, you know, from Krypton, and just flew through and sliced off the top of the things, it would have no impact upon your sukkah. It would change nothing about the sukkah. In other words, it's not really part of the sukkah. It's like, I'll call it, there's a sugya later called Pesel HaYotzei Min HaSukkah. It's a discussion on Machlokas HaMaharim, what that means. But there certainly could be a notion that, I mean, sometimes it's even kosher. But it's really a very loose analogy, maybe not a good one. But I would just argue that anything that's not required for the Hechsher Sukkah that you built is something that we're not going to look at in making this determination. Remember, let me make a sort of another observation. We haven't discussed Reb Zeira yet. I'll explain at some point later, maybe not today, but when we get to some other stuff within the sugya, why I'm saying this. Of the three terutzim that are given, which terutzim would you say are sort of, I don't want to use the term balabatish textual, but something like that, and which are conceptual? If you had to think about the three terutzim, what would you say? How would you classify them? If I give you those two categories, Levi. Hello? Rava was the only one that's truly conceptual. Rava says, it's time of the krah. The Pasuk says the purpose of the mitzvah. Briskers never talk about reasons for mitzvahs. It's anathema to them. They talk about what, not why. Right? Rav is saying, because the purpose of the mitzvah is you walk in and you appreciate the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? He took us out of Mitzrayim. Right? That's not conceptual teretz. Reb Zeira says, you have to sit in the cell of the sach. That's what a sukkah is. It's not really, I mean, it's a definition of sukkah. Rava starts talking about it has to be a bina rai. Well, it doesn't have to be bina rai. It has to be so we can look at it. It could be a bina rai. That's a very conceptual approach. There happens to be that Rav and Abaye were probably the first briskers. That's not my observation, but Rav and Abaye do seem to, nothing is ever abrupt, but they seem to mark kind of a move, a very clear break in terms of conceptualization. Any number of concepts that you know, famous concept in Hilchos Shabbos, stem from the generation of Abaye and Rava or later. If you take something like the concept of psikereshe, did not exist until Rav and Abaye. Those who've learned Devar Sheinu Miskaveh. In fact, I forget which one. Abaye and Rava, one of them came up with it. The other one originally didn't hold of it. And then after he heard the other one say it, he vasar the shema hadar savra. He accepted it. Which means that the concept didn't exist before. Otherwise, he would have gotten it from, you know, Rava, whoever, I think it was Rava, would have gotten it from his Rebbe. There are a lot of things that are like that. So it's not surprising that Rava here marks sort of a conceptual twist. And in fact, it's a crucial question because The $64 million question that Rishonim want to know is, did Abaye accept Rava's Teretz? Did Abaye accept Rava's Teretz? It's very important because you have to put together the pieces of a puzzle. This Gemara with a Gemara on Dav Zayin, where Abaye collects the Shitos who hold that Sukkah is Diras Keva Be'ina. We'll see. If some of you might have seen this in the Rishonim already. So it's a crucial, we want to know whether Abaye accepted Rava's Teretz. But Rava's Teretz is a very conceptual Teretz. It requires sort of envisioning, you know, theoretical obligations, even if they're not actually physically present here. Right? You build your walls out of iron, you know, cast iron walls to your sukkah. It'd be a great sukkah. The only problem is on a sunny day, it would be cool much of the day, but at night you'd be boiling. So the question is, so I'm comfortable saying that Rava is viewing things Noah conceptually. In other words, he wants walls that in concept could be Arai, the Shir. That's fine. I'm willing to accept that. So the question that I want to ask now, though, is where does Rabbi Zeira's Teretz fall out? Rava is Schach focused. Rava is really walls focused. Walls that, the Schach, but really is a product of the walls and the size of the walls. Where does Rabbi Zeira's position fall out? So, in order to understand Rabbi Zeira's position, where it falls out, you first have to understand Rabbi Zeira's position. Now, something very funny happened. Let's read. Let's get someone who would like to read for me. Weinreich. Yes, yes, yes. You can't pretend it's your brother. That's right. Go ahead. So let's read from. Let's read Rabba first. Minani Mili. All right, so how exactly does Rabba see this from the Pasuk? You sit in the sukkah so that future generations will remember that I took you out of Egypt. So how does he see that?
Sitting is immediate.
So if you don't see the schach on top of you, apparently, you don't really know you're sitting in a sukkah. Okay, and if you ask me, today, that reason is not quite as shayach as it once was. Right? Today, you know when you're sitting in the sukkah. Our homes, the homes of the poorest people, are palaces and castles compared to what 99.9% of wealthy people lived like 2,000 years ago. So when you step out into the sukkah today, I'm not saying nowhere. There are, unfortunately, there is poverty in some houses that are barely qualify as such. But for the most part, any of us step from our house into the sukkah, you don't need to see the schach to know you're in the sukkah. Right? You can just say hello to the bees, and you're fine. Miss Ellis.
The one thing that doesn't make sense to me about Rava and the in terms of a recess schach is, how can you even argue that you could do that if the schach is here, the wall is here? The cell isn't coming from the schach, it's going to be the wall.
Let's leave that aside for now. Leave my suggestion aside for now. Yeah, here?
I don't think Rush is being really the way you're saying that. Is that enough, or do I need to explain that?
Why do you think so?
I think the way he explains the drasha seems roundabout and confusing if you read it the way you want to read it. And he also
Which
was
the term? Rabbah now?
Rabbah, yeah.
I thought I said any chiddush. Right? It had the yeshiva has to be nikarlach. When you sit in the sukkah, you realize you're sitting in the sukkah.
Right, that's true. I'm saying the explanation of how we get from the pasuk, I think, is.
What does Rashi say? He says, "Asay sukkah shishivas nikras l'siridu kiba sukoso shati tzivesi leishev." Oh yes, okay, yeah. So I was going to get into this. So what is Rashi? So Rashi goes a step further. That the pshat is what we said. Rashi goes a step further. I'm not really sure why, but he says, "Kiba sukoso shati es bnei Yisrael." So what does that mean? So the pshat in you should know that I. Caused the Jewish people to dwell in Sukkot when we left Egypt. But Rashi actually understands the word Hoshafti on something else. What does he understand the word Hoshafti mean? Hello? What? No. That's what he said. How is he reading the word? The Pshat he says is the Anane Akavod. The Torah is telling you, the reason I've given you the mitzvah of sukkah is leman yedu d'shrechem. People will remember kivasu koso shafti es bnei Yisrael b'otzi es emet Yisrael. They'll remember that I caused the Jews to dwell in sukkahs when we left Egypt. But Rashi actually reads the word hoshafti differently. And what does he say? He says he's reading almost if it's kivasu kos moshiv ani es bnei Yisrael. Right, I am seating the Jews in the sukkahs. Leman yedu d'roseichem. That's how Rashi's reading. He says, "D'chsiv yedu kivasu koso shafti tzivisi leishev." Hoshafti doesn't mean I actually caused them to sit, but rather that I commanded them to sit. Then yotze mide pshuto the hekef anakav miyudarshin leidrasha. I'm not sure why Rashi feels compelled to say this, and I actually don't know the answer. The Torah says the reason why you do the mitzvah sukkah is leman yedu d'osechem ki basukos hoshafti es bnei Yisrael. Right? Basukos teshvu. Why? Ki basukos hoshafti. But you have to know. And if you're just sitting in your gazebo when it's beautiful weather and you don't realize that there's something off with the schach, or you don't realize you're not sitting in your house, then you're not going to remember that you're here for the mitzvah sukkah. Yeah, Yair?
I mean, there's no way to read the pasuk and infer that there's an obligation to recognize that the building you're in is the sukkah per se. I mean, the Talmud mitzvah is to remember what happened in the desert, remind me yedu. But how do I use the word yedu to qualify my sitting in the first place?
No, but it's not, I don't know why you might be right, but it would seem intuitive to me that the Torah gives us a mitzvah and it says leman yedu d'roseichem. That's the reason for the mitzvah, that it might in fact qualify how the mitzvah should be done in a way that will lead to the end result. Right, I don't actually personally do it, even though I think I should. I don't wear my tzitzis out. Arguably, and this was a long time, the Mishnah Berurah talks about this, it seems to me absurd not to wear your tzitzis out. Why? Because the Torah tells you, Leman tizkiru vasisemes kometzosai. I can't see my tzitzis. You know, if you're a 12-year-old and you hate wearing tzitzis because it's itchy, so you don't have to leave your tzitzis out. But for those of us who don't suffer, you know, such difficulties, I have no idea that I'm wearing tzitzis. I don't feel that I'm wearing tzitzis. If I put my strings out, l'man tizkuru v'asisem, v'isem osos, har temes kol mitzvos Hashem. Noam?
Just on that pasuk, does the retelling to apply to the entire tzitzit or just the tzitzit?
I think both. I assume both. I mean, the problem is, are you separated? I don't think it's just the tchelas. And Chazal's reading it, maybe, actually. Because they're suggesting the tchelas is blue, and tchelas is like the yam, and the yam is like the sky, and the sky is my new kisei akava, whatever it is. So either way, you know, if you're not wearing tcheles on your talis katan, but you'll see that the tcheles isn't there, and then you'll remember the tcheles that doesn't look, the tcheles you don't have that looks like the sea, that looks like the sky, right? So it might be in that pasuk. Right? Clearly in kiseite, you know, the mitzvah isn't distinguished. It's gedilim tasalach. They're really put together. You hear that?
Two things. First of all, I think Rashi's drasha is fine. The drasha is saying is that you have to know you're in the sukkah. By reading it not as a reason, there's an explanation. What's wrong with that? L'man yidu'udu etechem ki b'lmei you're sitting in a sukkah.
I know, I understand. I understand. It makes perfect sense. The first part of Rashi makes perfect sense to me. Shetein nikeres lecha yeshiva. So that I understand. It's the second part.
That even though you can't undo the pashut, which is the pshuta, which is talking the reason and suddenly on their kavod, even so, we dashen it for this Rasha.
What Rasha?
That you have to know you're sitting in a sukkah.
No. But the pasuk, the simple pasuk is Leman Yedu Derosa. The reason Basukos Teishu Shuvasemim Kol Ezrach BeYisrael LeRabbos Esager Yeshu Basukos Leman Yedu Derosechem. Why do you sit on the sukkos? Leman Yedu Haki Basukos or Shaftis BeYisrael. Let's say it's the Ananei Kavod. When we left Mitzrayim, we were homeless, we were hungry, God gave us man, He gave us shelter, He put us in, He gave us the Ananei Kavod to shelter us. And I want you to sit in the sukkah so that you will remember that I put you in the Ananei Kavod when you left Mitzrayim. Yeah. Now, therefore, it has to be Nikaris that I'm sitting in a sukkah. And if I can't see the schach, I'm not going to realize I'm not in a regular house.
Obviously, it has to be Nikaris. Take Titi as a great example of that.
Well, wait, I'm just looking at Rashi's first part. Yeah. I say sukkah she yeshivasa Nikaris lacha.
Yes.
Dichsim. Right, I understand that, Tarashi. I'm questioning, why do you need to do that?
Because generally, we don't hold reasons to be modifying mitzvot must be hold by Shem time of the car. It's not obvious.
So I would say that the simple interpretation, I know this is a family matter, but the simple interpretation would be that when the Torah tells you the reason, that should be sufficient. When the Torah doesn't tell you the reason. So I don't understand. If the Torah says you should sit in the sukkah in order that you should know that I took you out of Egypt, so would you think that it's okay to construct a sukkah which is not going to serve as a reminder?
You just gave another example we passed in our way with tzitzit. We do pass in our way with tzitzit in because... unless...
So I'll tell you what the difference is. The difference is there. The mitzvah is asiyas hatzitzis. So I could say the reason, I don't know if there's no mitzvah that I'm wearing it. It's is that the Torah tells us gedilim tasalach. It tells us v'asulahem tzitzis. It doesn't say... Now, so when? The question is when? When do you see it? When I make it. Yeah. When I put the baguette on, I see
there's
the tzitzis.
There's also other ways out of that.
But here, the Torah tells you, do this mitzvah. Dwell in the sukkah so that you will remember. Okay, I'm not going to... I think you're on to something, because Rashi was bothered, but I don't really fully understand. Yet, Yair?
Did Rava really believe that what was going to happen is that the Jewish people would be sitting in sukkot and not know that they're there, and think that they're in their house?
I think so.
Or is Pshat that you know it's a sukkah, but it is not obvious, it does not demonstrate its sukkahness?
What difference does the onlooker? Onlooker sees you.
But he,
I'll quote his language. He says, "Adam yodea shudar b'sukkah." And that's why I started with my comment about our housing today. Right? When you live in a beautiful climate, and you live in housing which is relatively poor compared to, in many contexts, it's absolutely conceivable that you forget you're in the sukkah. It's so perfect. There's no climate. They don't even climate control the houses. The temperature inside was essentially the temperature outside. If you had a sukkah where you had shade in the sukkah, your house was the same temperature. It's perfectly plausible to me in Bavel and Eretz Yisrael that literally you could not know you were in the sukkah because your house wasn't that different. Right? Our houses are palaces. What we live in, they're palaces. Right? For us, you could argue we should be pata from sukkah because it's always mitzdayer. There's no HVAC. There's no running water. There's nothing. It's a dump. The nicest sukkahs that people typically, I don't want to say, I'm sure there's some people who really are mekayim in the mitzvah b'idura, but any sukkah I've ever sat in my life, you know, of all the people I've ever visited, compared to what we live in, it's a garbage dump. It's a lul shel tarnagolim, you know, which is that concept of, it doesn't compare. You couldn't possibly not know you're sitting in the sukkah. But you're counting the minutes till you can get out of the sukkah most of the time. No?
Can you make a difference between kind of a passive recognition and an active noise and you're seeing the sukkah and then you really know as opposed to like, oh, okay, I'm in the sukkah.
Fine. Okay, so you can take away some of my hyperbole. That's fine. But the point that nonetheless, there's supposed to be an active recognition, right? Why is the active, what's it? Is an active recognition, you're sitting in the sukkah. So now I think, oh, why am I sitting in the sukkah? Because the Rabbeinu Shalom was going to chesed to us.
If we're talking about the whole point of the sukkah is the stuff, then the stuff should be an integral part of that.
Okay. So.
So therefore you have to see it. Therefore the stuff has to be the thing that triggers your.
Fine. Okay, fine. So again, you don't have to give my whole impassioned speech or remind you how blessed we are and how spoiled we are physically. Fine. So strike that from the record. I agree. But I'm more concerned about Rashi. Why does Rashi feel the need to go into to insist that so that you have to reread the pasuk? Kivasu koso shafti is basically I commanded you to dwell in sukkahs. I don't know what Rashi's adding, Morty.
Without the way Rashi reads the pasuk, yedu. There might not be necessarily the hugest difference between the sukkah and the house, but at the end of the day, you're living in a different place now. So yedu could very easily come, just the fact that you know that it's reminding you of the sukkah in the midbar could just as easily be from the fact that you're in a different place.
I'll grant you that that's not so different than the direction of knowledge is all. But at the end of the day, Rabbah doesn't need to, I don't know why Rashi feels the need to read the pasuk that way. Without Rabbah saying it, you would have said, right, it's not that it refers to the architecture of the sukkah. You sit in the sukkah and you know you're in a sukkah, and why the reason for sukkah? So that you remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay. But what I don't understand in Rashi is that the drasha of Rabbah is very straightforward. The interpretation, basukos teshvu l'man yedidor seichem. It has to be yeshiva hanikeres. In other words, if it just said basukos teshvu shavasemim, it wouldn't matter whether you realize why you're sitting in the sukkah. But Torah says sit in the sukkah l'man yedidor seichem. So you realize that maybe it's Rabbah's chiddush is that the architecture of the sukkah has to be one which is conducive. Now, we knew that to some extent, that it has to be, you know, you can't put a roof on top, it's got to be a sukkah, but the idea that your sukkah is supposed to be constructed in a way that will specifically stimulate memory, so that, I mean, the sach is low enough, because that's what really stands out in the sukkah, okay, I understand all that. I just don't understand why the need to reread Kivasu Koso Shafti. Yehuda?
Reading the pasuk really just to say that the pshat level is an anei kavod.
But why mention that here? In other words, what does that take? I would have said, let's say pshat.
But what do we know? I mean, l'man yedu what? Like, what are we coming to know? So he's saying we're not coming to know that like the sukkot are like the actual sukkot that. So
that's fine. I understand the point, but it's fairly logical to say we sit in sukkos made of produce as a zecher for the special sukkos that God made, right? That's what you're saying. That the basukos, our sukkos, teshu shavas yamim leman yedu dor sechem ki basukos. I protected you with the nanei kaveh that were like sukkos. I understand that. But Rashi is clearly rereading the words the word hoshafti, tzivisi leishev. I don't. In other words, we have basukos teshvu shavas yamim.
Maybe he can't interpret sukkot to mean ananei kavod.
But he does. He feels that compelled to apologize for that. And even if, let's say you wanted to read sukkos as real sukkos in the midbar, fine, it's a machlokas. Even better, it works even easier. Sit in a sukkah and know that you're in a sukkah to remind you of the sukkah. So, Rashi's bothered by something. I can't quite grasp what he's bothered by. Zach, I don't want to kill this. We've already beaten this to death. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess I'm wondering why is it not
bothered by the pshat in the pasuk.
Why is he not bothered by pshat?
I mean, that seems to be his biggest issue here, is that we happen to know, like Rashi saying, well, we all know pshat in the pasuk is an ayah cover, but Rava here is, you know, reinterpreting it as Rashabti means tzimtzumation. His problem stems from the fact that
so I'm going to give a partial answer to the question. This I know, but I still don't know how to put the pieces together. You know what's prompting Rashi to make this comment here? It's the Gemara on top of Beis Amid Beis. When they say, Hahu Yediyah L'Dorosu D'Chsiv, that's the answer to the question, Rashi, but I don't know what the answer actually is. I don't fully understand it. In other words, Rashi here knows the answer of the Gemara there, and he's trying to explain how Rabbah's not reading like that Samaran. They say, Hahu Yediyah L'Dorosu D'Chsiv. Right, with the way Rashi explains there, does he even say La biyadiyah di yeshiva sukkah ka'amar ele biyadiyah razdos habar and hekev sukkah sanay kaver nasa la'afos. Right, that's clearly why he's reading what he's reading here. I know that, but I just don't understand why you have to get into that. In other words, I guess I can start to flesh it out. The other Amoraim are saying that the purpose of the mitzvah of sukkah. The purpose of the mitzvah of sukkah is to remind us of the sukkahs in Egypt. Rabbah saying is that the ofan ha-yeshiva b'sukkah itself, not merely that I'm sitting in the sukkah, but the way I sit in the sukkah has to remind me. So that's what Rashi's trying to pull out of the word, hoshavti. Right? That's why he's trying to change it, because everybody has basukos teshu shivasi, I mean, and l'man yedu dorosechem. But it's something about, it's because of that Gemara, they say that yediyah l'doros hu d'chsiv, they're saying that the mitzvah of sukkah is a reminder, because we didn't see down on Ayakavot, so we're, when we do the mitzvah of sukkah, we ask why, and the answer is that. But for Rabbah, the actual yeshiva itself somehow is different. But I still don't know why you need to pull that out of Hoshavti. You're just emphasizing that the connection between Laman Yedu and Basukos Teshvu is different than the way the other Amoraim understood it. I know where Rashi's coming from. I just can't quite put my finger on it. Yes? No?
I don't see why you necessarily have to link the sitting with the active memory. And I feel like that's why Rashi is bothered by Hoshavti.
You know, I know, but once you want to say, once you decide you're going to link it, you can get it simply from keep Basukos Teshvu Shavas Yamim, Laman Yedu Derosechan. You don't. I understand the difference between Rabbah and the other Amoraim is the other Amoraim say the mitzvah is the mazkir, and Rabbah says it's not just the mitzvah. It's, in other words, it's not just having the mitzvah. It's actually in the process of fulfilling the mitzvah you have to be reminded.
You don't have that from the other
passage. I don't. But I guess. Okay. Maybe. Okay. But now I want to get to my prize, Rabbi Zeira. What does Rabbi Zeira say? Weinreich.
Rabbi Zeira Amar Mehava.
Okay. So, slow down. So what did Rabbi Zeira say? He starts out with the premise that a sukkah, which means tzchach, has to be litzel. So he says, up until 20 amos, Adam is yoshev b'tzel sukkah. When the schach is within 20 amos, you're sitting in the tzel of the schach. When the schach of the sukkah is above 20 amos, you're sitting b'tzel defanos. So this is a physics, sort of physics, an optics question, or something like that. What is what is Rav Zeira saying right now? I mean, the question is really, how does Abaye understand Rav Zeira when he asks the question? Kasser?
That if the roof is too high, the shade will be provided by the walls.
Okay. And, therefore, the roof is?
Not providing the shade.
Does it provide shade?
It's not providing enough shade. Well, it has to provide
maybe, shade. Yehuda?
You just do the whole calculation. You want to figure what percentage of the floor is shaded by what?
Okay, so the first thing I'm going to tell you is we are going to work with high noon. That clearly has to be the assumption in the sugya. It has to be high noon.
Maybe it's essentially the day. Maybe we say when we get above 20 amos, most of the day.
So given the mitzvahs here, it's pretty clear. If you make your sukkah 19 amos, and you make a minimum size sukkah, the amount of the day in which that sale based on the angle the sun is going to provide shade for in the sukkah, is almost not zero, but it's very, very tiny. Okay, I think it's clear in the discussion that what we are talking about here is we're going to talk about what we talk about. In order for tzel, for schach to cast shade, you have to have the sun overhead. Otherwise, it's a totally different thing. Now, that's the starting point. So here, let's talk a little bit about physics, astronomy, shape of the universe, shape of the earth. Daniel. So can someone explain to Daniel why he's not correct? Daniel, where do you live?
Florida.
No, don't you live?
New York.
Okay. I don't think it would matter even if you lived in Florida, but I'm not sure. You know what? What's the latitude of... What latitude is Florida? Do you know? I mean, I know it's a broad thing. Okay.
Close to the equator.
It is not that close to the equator, but it is. All right. I want to know whether it's above or below 23 degrees. Okay, so let's talk. Sorry, Noah, you live in New Rochelle, Scarsdale? Well, I'm sorry. Sorry, who's the... No, Benji. Okay, Benji. You live in New Rochelle, okay? At what time of the year is the sun directly overhead in New Rochelle? Straight up. I'll give you the time of day it would be in theory. It would be solar noon. What time or times of the year is it directly overhead? Okay. Stanford. Los Angeles, even. Morning. Brooklyn. Brooklyn's a country in its own right. Okay.
Wouldn't it be the summer solstice when it's
directly? So the answer is never. If you are above the tropic of whichever or below the tropic of whichever, if you are more than 23 degrees from the equator, the sun is never directly overhead. In the northern hemisphere, the sun always cuts to the south. It's why if you want to get solar panels on your house in Teaneck, you better have southern exposure. If you live on my side of the block and you have trees in front of you, it's pointless because the trees are going to block the sun because the sun is always to the south. I made this comment to you, several of you in Seder. If you've come to our house, those of you who were there, those of you maybe Hanukkah time, although it'll be dark Hanukkah time when we're doing this, if you were to look right outside, or, you know, where my wife was grilling, you go on the porch, the porch is 9 feet wide. The first couple of feet of that porch, I don't know exactly how much, it might even be up to half the porch, as far as I can tell, never gets any sun. Never. Ever, ever. It's always in the shade. Why? Because the sun, even at the longest day of the year, when the sun is most north in its route, the summer solstice, it is still to the south. And the sun, even when it's getting closer to overhead, it's still not there. And that's why those portions never, small amount, never get sun. If you look at the difference between what the sun does at noon in the winter and in the summer, you're gonna see a difference. It's going to be less shade in the summer. Why? Because the sun is never directly overhead except for between the tropics. In the equator, I believe it's directly overhead every single day. Why is that the case? Because the Earth's tilt is 23 degrees. And if you do the geometry, you cannot get the sun directly overhead unless you are within 23 degrees of the equator. That's where I think it's 23 degrees, and that's where those lines are on the globe. The Ran did not know this, by the way. The Ran was baffled by the Metzius. He thought it was wrong. Now, the truth is, the Ran lived in Spain. Spain is a little to the south of New York, but not as much as you would think. Israel's not as much as to the south. It's much warmer year-round, but not as much to the south. But he did not seem to believe that such a thing was true. He thought when the sun was overhead, the Ran's on the first Amud in the Rith, he seemed to think it's Machish the Metzius. The Ran actually cared about the physically observable phenomena, and that would have changed his opinion. I believe that the Ran is not... I don't know actually what degree and how the geometry would work out, but in principle, I believe that if assuming this is what Rizera meant, he's absolutely correct. If you build your sukkah tall enough, you build it tall enough, and the sukkah small enough, and that's what's going to come in on Amud Bey, the sheer dalalos. If you build a 7 tefach by 7 tefach sukkah, and you build it 40 feet tall, okay, you're going to need good engineering for those walls. And the sun is directly overhead where we live in here, in Yeshiva, I would not be surprised if all... There is going to be shade, of course. Of course the schach casts shade. But where's the shade going to be? it's not going to be on the floor of the sukkah. It's going to be outside the sukkah. And that's what Reb Zeira said. I think that's what Reb Zeira says, Lamaskana. I've jumped ahead. But Reb Zeira says that when, here's the crucial question. Reb Zeira says that on Esrim Amma, Adam Yoshe B'tzel Sukkah, Lamala Esrim Amma, Ein Adam Yoshe B'tzel Sukkah, El B'tzel Defanos. Abaye misunderstood what Reb Zeira said. That's why he asked the question. What did he think Reb Zeira meant? Did Reb Zeira mean that there was no sale of ischach on the floor of the sukkah? Is that what Reb Zeira meant? No. What did he think Reb Zeira meant? Then
the shadow on the sukkah would be from the walls, not from the sukkah.
Or you don't. I would say that you don't need the ischach in that case. The walls provide complete shade under such circumstances. In other words, it's not that there is no shade theoretically cast from the ischach to the floor, but since it's totally necessary. If you took the schach off, the sukkah would be just as shaded there, when the sun is directly overhead. Therefore, you're not really being Yoshe B'tzel Sukkah. Even though the schach is actually casting shade down there, but so are the walls, and you don't need the schach. Kesser?
My question is more on, like, there must be an assumption in this when he's asking this question, when Reb Zeira is bringing this point, that the walls of the sukkah are solid walls. And
yeah.
Not that there's the...
Yes, they're not see-through walls. That's fine. That wouldn't have been... You wouldn't expect people to do that. Generally speaking, their walls were made out of agricultural products. Most agricultural products, certainly as processed by man in the classical period, were not translucent. What?
Just solid. Well, I mean, just having, like...
They've been solid.
Posts in between. Like, not even having... Like, having... Like wooden.
It would have. I suspect there would have been a lot of vegetation. That's my guess. So they're assuming that the walls would, if the walls were normal walls, they would provide all the shade, and the schach would be unnecessary. It's not that there would be no net sale from it, but rather unnecessary. Now, what did Abaye ask? Read on, Daniel.
I'm really
Abaye. Ashteros karnayim.
Ashteros karnayim.
Ah, so Bias says the following. Let's say I build my sukkah between two tall mountains, two cliffs, actually. I don't know what Ashtaros Kanayim is referred to in Chumash and in Parshas Lech Lecha, but imagine that you have two very steep cliffs. At the bottom of that canyon, you don't ever get sunlight, at least depending where the canyon is. It's a very, very narrow canyon. You're not in the tropics. Right. If you're enough farther enough north or south of the tropics, of those lines, you will never get any sunlight in there. Now, even it might be 10 feet wide. And let's say you build a sukkah there, 10 by 10, and 8 feet tall, a normal size sukkah. Nonetheless, you're always going to have shade. Even if you didn't put tzchach on your sukkah, it will always be shaded in the sukkah. Why? Because the tall cliffs. So Abaye says, if what you're claiming is that you actually have to be getting sail from the tzchach, and benefiting from that, you know, again, theoretically with the sun at high noon, then in Ashtaros Karnayim, you're not getting any benefit from the tzel schach. How do I know? Because if I took the schach away, you'd still have shade. So Abaye says, is that possible? You build your sukkah between two really tall buildings in New York City, you know, in a narrow alley, which never sees the sun, you're going to tell me that it's possible? The assumption, of course, Abaye was making is that it's not, and we accept that. So what is the Gemara answer? I said, Rav Zeira answers, Amar Lei, Hasam Dal. So what is Rav Zeira's answer to that? What's his answer?
Hello?
No. Can I say
that? But if you took away the mountains, the walls would still be the things providing the shade in this puzzle case.
Well, he's not talking about making this whole sukkah there. He's talking about building a normal sukkah there. He says, if you take away the mountains, you have the sukkah. If you take away the defanos, in the case that are a very tall sukkah, you have no sukkah. What does that mean? Why do you have
the walls? In our case, the walls are providing the shade. And the schach is not.
Is not. In the Havamina, it was that you don't need the schach. Not that the schach doesn't cast tzel in the sukkah. You just don't need it. The walls will do a perfectly fine job. You put the walls there at high noon, it will be completely shaded in the sukkah. The maskana is no. It's not that you're not. It's not a problem if you happen not to be getting the benefit from the tzel of the schach, because while the tzel of the schach works, you also have tzel of other things. It's only a problem if the schach actually is not providing shade on its own. Take away everything. Take away the mountains. Take away the walls. Is the schach going to provide shade at high noon in the sukkah? The answer is by the tall sukkah, no. By Ashtaroth Karnayim, of course. If you take away the mountain, the cliffs, and you take away the walls of the sukkah at high noon, you'll have a nicely shaded sukkah underneath. So the point, the Hava Amina was that you need to get hana from the schach. The maskana is that you have to be able to get hana from the schach, even if you happen to have other things here that provide the same hana. Morty?
Why should we assume that what changes from the Hava Amina to the maskana is Abai's understanding of the Metzius, when we could just say that Abai misunderstood his drasha? Meaning, if we say that what changes, Abai thought he literally meant you have to have shade from the schach, and then at the end he realized. Rabbi Zera explained to him that it's not that you have to have the shade; it's that it has to be
has to produce shade on its own.
Right. So
that's what I suggested, right?
No, that's.
That's what I suggested originally. Originally, Abai thought that Reb Zera's objection to the tall sukkah was that you don't need the tzel of the schach, you get it from elsewhere. And in the maskana, Reb Zera told him, no, I don't require you to get the shade from the schach, I require the schach to actually create shade if it were there on its own. The fact that you have backup systems or other things that are also adding shade, that would create shade, you know, that you would, in other words, I would argue that the fanos are also no good here. Not no good, but they're not providing the shade, because even after the fanos, the schach would provide the shade. Right, so if they're both providing the same shade, that's fine. It's a problem when the schach itself would not actually not provide the shade.
So why do you have to have the stipulation in the beginning that the schach, meaning in the Hava Amina, that the schach...
Oh, you don't know, on the Rabbi, you don't have it there. In the Hava Amina, it seems like Abaye thinks that Reb Zera understands that the schach is providing shade directly underneath, and nonetheless, it's no good.
So why do you have to have that? Why
do we have to say in the Havamina Abaye that the schach was providing shade? Why? Because otherwise he wouldn't have asked the question from Ashtaroth Karnayim. Ashtaroth Karnayim is the case where you have a normal sukkah, but the schach clearly providing shade except you're built up between two cliffs. Abaye is asking that question indicates he didn't realize that. Hello?
So would that make a biased case some kind of like oral deal that he's kind of explaining? Because it seems like...
Yes, Rabbi Zera. You could say Rabbi Zera is conceptually consistent with Rabbi Zera. For those of you who do not understand that question, it's going to come up. There's a Ritva, which I wasn't necessarily going to read, but there's a very a concept that comes up in many sugyas and shas. It starts with Rabbi Zera's principle. Rabbi Zera's principle is as follows. The Mishnah Menachos says that if you bring a Karban Mincha, and normally if I say Hare Alai Mincha, I have to bring a Mincha, and I take one Isarim of Solas, and I take, I think, either a log or a quarter of a log of a Shemen, and I mix them together in a Kli, and I put them in a Kli, and I bring them to the Mikdash, and we bring a Mincha. Let's say I'm an over-generous spirit, I want to bring a Mincha to Esrim, a Kol Nidre Appeal for Menachos. And I'm going to bring two Esrim. The next says, I'm going to bring a 3 Esrim Mincha. So the din is that you bring one Kli, you don't add Shemen, you just add flour. It's going to be a little bit of a thicker mix. The Mishnah says up until 60. When you reach 61, so then you have to bring two Kalim, you have to split it, and then you bring a minimum amount of Shemen at each Kli, and then whichever, how we break out the flour. Why? So one territory is some type of Xera, Xera Sakasa, that the maximum number of Esronim that were brought in a Karban Musaf was in the first day of Sukkot, and there were 60 Esronim, so, or 61 Esronim, and it's enough that the Mincha B'Tzibur should be one bigger than the Mincha B'Yachid. There's a second answer given, I think, by Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah,
who says that shishim mivlavim, shishim ve'echar eina mivlavim. When you bring a karban mincha, you're supposed to take the flour and the oil and mix it all up. Now, b'di'evet, if you mix just a little bit up enough to take the kometz out, we say it's good b'di'evet. The b'lila, the bila, is not ma'akeres. So the Gemara asks, 1 second, if you're telling me the reason why al pi din you're not allowed to bring a mincha of 61 asronin is because shishim ve'echar eina mivlavim, you often you can't do bila properly on it, but you don't have to do bila, the mincha is still good. So that's where Reb Zera utters this very famous principle, which is applied in many other sugyas and shas. If the situation that you're dealing with is a situation where it's ruya lekach, you could do it, you just don't bother to do it, it's not ma'ake. But if it's not even possible, if the chetz, if you want to call it that, is so puzzle, if the situation is so puzzle in the first place that it's not right to do the mitzvah properly, then it's ma'ake. One example of an application elsewhere in shas of this is the following. There are three elements of the mitzvah of chalitza. There's kriyas atarsha, or there's the statements that they each have to say in Lashon HaKodesh. There's a dialogue, like a play, right? She says lo avaya mi, and he says lo chafasti lekachta, and so on and so forth. So you have kriya, you have rakika, she has to spit on the ground near him, and she has to take off the shoe. The psach, the machlokas hanoim, we paskin that only the chalitza is ma'akeres. If you didn't do the kriya satarshias, if they just show up in front of the base and make an attempt to do chalitza, she doesn't spit, she doesn't say anything, he doesn't say anything, she just takes off his shoe, then she is chalutza and she is free to remarry. Let's say the woman is either, she has no arms, so she can't, let's say the woman is mute. She can't speak. So you would say, well, okay, so just do chalitza rakika. B'di'evet, you can't do the amira, the parshas, you don't do it. So the answer is, ilemes cannot do chalitza, and ilem can't do chalitza. Why? Because they can't read the psukim. But kriya is not ma'keves, yes. Kol ha'roi l'kriya, in kriya ma'keves no. But kol she'en roi l'kriya, kriya is not ma'keves.
So it does seem, Rav Zera here, the way I'm explaining it, is that tzchach, which is roi to provide shade, when you separate the extraneous circumstances, is in fact good. Now, the only difference, and therefore, that's a lot like Reb Zera's principle. The only reason why it's a little different is that here it's good l'chatchila. There, those are only good by b'di'evet situations. That's why it's a little bit different. Reb Zera is basically saying you don't need to get direct tana from the tzel. If you happen to build your sukkah in a place where you get it, it's fine. We look at your sukkah in isolation, your theoretical sukkah, and if that would provide shade, that is sufficient. Yes? No?
The problem is you can't rule Reb Zera back to such a conceptual level, because then you could just say, as long as the tzchach is roi to provide you shade, no matter where it actually provides shade in space.
No, but I'm saying, let's airlift the sukkah into the middle of the desert, right? You airlift the tall sukkah, basically you can't sit in the sukkah to get shade. Right? This, it will not provide you with any shade if you sit in the sukkah. So that's not cool. That's not a sukkah anymore. Right? If you put it in a place where, and I would even say it in a different way. Technically speaking, it's true that when I build an Ashtaros Karnayim, which is really providing the shade?
The mountains.
How do you know that?
Because you can take off the schach.
Because if you look at the top of the schach and you look at the outsides of the mountains, the top of the schach will be dark, the outsides of the mountain will be light. So it's really providing the shade of the Ashtaros Karnayim. I'll grant you that. But nonetheless, I think nonetheless, I think determining what makes it a roya to be a sukkah is to be a building in which I have shade. I cannot be in that building and have shade. Right? If I put that in the middle of the desert, I can be in the building or I can have shade, but I can't be in the building and have shade.
So it's not just about the schach in that sense.
No. I think it's clear what makes the schach no good by the tall sukkah is that the shade, there is shade, is that the shade isn't in the sukkah for someone who sits in it, to someone who sits outside the sukkah, whichever side that is. Probably where we live, it's the person who's sitting on the northern side of the sukkah, just outside, is probably the one who gets the shade.
So, in other words, to make it in conceptual terms, it's really not din schach, according to Reb Zera, unlike Rabbah. It's a din in the idea of a sukkah itself.
Well, it is the schach in relationship to the sukkah that it's on top of.
In relationship to the ground. Really, the sukkah, according to him, is schach plus shade underneath it.
Well, yes, because it's schach plus stefanos. Everybody agrees is the definition of a sukkah. And how do you decide whether you're sitting inside a sukkah or outside a sukkah? Are you inside the walls or are you outside the walls? So the schach has to provide shade for inside the walls. Rush? Yes, you heard that.
If I would have asked, how about a sukkah at night? It's not providing shade.
Well, so
is that not the same question?
So the answer is no. It's understood. That's why I say everybody understands. We're asking the question at high noon.
But I'm saying because that's a technical case where you don't have shade.
I know. I understand. But you don't have to go to nightfall. If I go at sunset, I could have no schach on the sukkah, and if I have a wall, it will be tzilas amruba mechamasa. It doesn't have to be. That's why I said.
Why I thought that there's something in sukkah that at high noon it has to have shade.
Because, well, that's how do you decide whether something is providing shade or not? High noon is a pretty good time to do so. Right. Now, that's the only time you're going to find out whether a roof provides shade for that which it's covering.
If it has to provide shade in order to be kosher, then why is it kosher at any other moment?
So that's what I'm saying. In other words, that is the nature of a sukkah is. I'll say peishfu ke'en tadur a little bit, right? You build a sukkah as modeled upon a house, but it's an element of arai. But the whole point is when you build a structure to provide shade, you know there are times of the day that your roof provides shade and times of the day that your walls provide shade. That's by its very definition. The sukkah, the schach provides protection from any number of things. So I understand. It's a given. It's just, I think it's taken as self-evident that the definition of the sukkah of the schach of the sukkah is measured by its capacity to provide shade, which is only going to be a discussion when the sun is directly above.
You know what I'm saying? If a bias habamina was that it has to technically provide shade for you, then in that habamina, it should only work when at high noon.
I understand, but obviously Abaye knew that was absurd, because then no sukkah works.
But once you know that's absurd, then you know it's a conceptual thing and not a technical thing. The Havamina would only work at high noon.
Tell me something. Do you want to be machshir a sukkah that's chamasa meruba mitzilas at high noon, but the rest of the day is not is tzilasa meruba mechamasa?
No, because it violates the conceptual.
But we know you need tzilasa meruba mechamasa in the schach. And that's the way they form it. It means a rove, the way the Gemara defines it. They talk about mechzal mechzal, but the bottom line is, you need silasa meruba mechamas as a product of the schach. Reb Zeira's position is not coming out of left field. Right? He understands that the halacha requires the schach for the purpose of providing tzel, and the schach only provides tzel when there's light potentially shining through. So I think it's taken as self-evident.
It's taken as self-evident that it's conceptual.
Okay, and the concept is determined at noon.
Right, but once you say that, then it's a conceptual thing it could provide shade for you.
Well, that in effect that is the maskana of Reb Zeira.
Right, but I'm saying what's the habamina?
Okay, so you can never ask me that. You have to be careful about asking the question what the habamina is the Gemara, because the answer could have been inachanami. We could have answered that too. It's what the Rishonim call olitamech. And let's say you wanted to work it. They could have given that answer. So the answer of Zaira is that this is really a conceptual thing, right? Which we had to come to. You're correct. I think your point is well made. That Abaye's, if you take Abaye's assumption, reductio ad absurdum, which someone could have challenged, I'm not sure you have to, then you would have seen that his whole premise was wrong. Now the answer is that it's a conceptual shade, because only at one time of the day is it truly, or a small part of the day is it truly being shade. Yeah, in a Hanami, we eventually would have had to reach that conclusion anyway. Yehuda? So I said this to a couple of you. If I'm correct, and I think it's the pshat, then they weren't living in between the tropics. But if you did live in the tropics, if we paskin like Rabbi Zeira, you should be able to make a sukkah as tall as you want.
Alternatively, what if you make a sukkah out of string and you fill in the gaps logically, and the walls cannot provide shade?
So again, no, I think it's very clear that what we require in a sukkah is when the sun is overhead, whatever that means. That the schach be casting shade on the bottom of the sukkah, and let's say it would be a majority, probably.
Right. Oh, so if the sukkah is too tall, it won't matter. It doesn't matter if the walls aren't casting shade, the schach isn't casting shade either.
Correct. Okay. Morty.
I'm sort of going to attack one of the basic assumptions that we're working with. If you had a very tall, narrow schach in the sukkah, the schach, the place the schach would be casting the shadow wouldn't be on the outside of the sukkah. It would just be on one of the inner walls of the sukkah. If you took away the schach, the sukkah would be casting the same shadow on the outside. It's the inside of the sukkah that changes.
Let's assume What we're trying to see, the question is the following. Does the schach provide shade for the person in that sukkah, sitting in the sukkah, which is on the bottom?
So it's the bottom of the sukkah. It's just any point in the sukkah.
No, granted, it is provided. If you could levitate up, to the top, you would be shaded by definition, is because you'd be in a shorter sukkah. But since, generally speaking, as a rule, human beings don't levitate, and that's where we have something called the 20 amos is measured from the karka ha-sukkah where the people live to the schach, that's where we look. Okay. That's why a sukkah, remember, has karka, it's got the phanos, it has schach, and it has width and it has height, width, length, and height. I think that it would be possible according. It might be possible to everybody.
90-degree angle to the ground, the wall.
What's that? No, but the schach, you have to be under the schach. Ivana is possible.
Not a sharp angle, but a very slight angle to the sun. You look slightly.
So excuse me. What? You know the din of Dofen Akuma? You're describing Dofen Akuma.
Yeah.
Dofen Akuma means the following. Today we're not zocher. Somebody left the cap and stole the pen. I got to start bringing it. Yeah, how come you don't have a Martin? Okay. One of the rules is that if you have, let's say you take that guy who has a living room and he wants to take the roof down. He does that. He puts the schach across. It's all fine and good, provided with one condition is met. Let's say when you have that roof, the walls are not, it's not the walls, the walls of the room, of the living room, it's not the entire roof of the living room. As long as on every side, or on three sides at least, you have less than 4 amos of roof, solid roof, before you reach the schach, you're fine. In other words, in general, if you're building a sukkah, and instead of starting the schach, the temporary roofing, right next to the walls, you have some solid stuff. You have boards there, solid boards. As long as the boards, the wall makes a right angle, are less than 4 amos before the schach starts, the wall is considered part of the sukkah. It's attached to the schach. You cannot sleep underneath or eat underneath that thing. It's called Dofen Akuma. We look at the walls and it's a bent wall. But you still have to be under the schach. So, if in your case, in the Leaning Tower of Gale, okay, because a gale of wind blew it, slightly, but it's, gale proof so that it still hasn't been ripped out of the ground, okay, in such a case, what you would do is you would say, listen, under this leaning wall, you can't, that's no good. And then the schach, you'd have to make sure, as long as you didn't have, let's say, Dalet Amos here, because there's no sukkah underneath, you'd probably be fine. And the part that is floor, not on the walls, not under a wall, under the schach, would be fine.
And the more reasonable version of the question.
Thank you for giving me the unreasonable version, yes.
It's just a 500-person sukkah, and no matter how...
It's a what?
500-person sukkah. I've seen those sukkahs, they exist, they're fine.
Okay.
They'll always provide shade, even if it's 120 on the top. Most likely. Because of...
Can someone respond to that, please? It's not fair... Well, you didn't read Rashi. Yehuda? Respond. If it's more than 4x4 amos, the Gemara says Reb Zeira would say it's kosher. That's, so in other words, yes, and according to Tosfos, the first answer in Tosfos on Daf Beis Amud Beis, the 20 amos, 4x4 is enough for 20 amos. If you want to make it 40 amos, you might need it, 8x8 or something like that. Right? In other words, it's scalable, at least according to one teretz in Tosfos. The teretz I understand. The other teretz I don't understand. So that's exactly the point. Now, there was one difficult Rashi, but by now I think the Rashi is actually very simple. Yair, you mowed it to me yet? That might be what's going on in Rashi?
It sounds like what you said during Shir is a lot closer to what I said during Seder than it sounded during Seder. But let's see how Rashi works first.
Okay, so if you take a look, I was bothered when I read this Rashi. Ella Bitzel Defanos. And Daniel, your last words of service for now. Ella Bitzel Defanos. Oh, you know what? I'll pick on Zach because oh, chavrus o misu. So go ahead. Ein tzarich schach. So, how does Rashi explain Reb Zeira's shita, the initial stage?
You wouldn't need the schach because the shade is being casted through the
All right, so let me ask you a question. At this point, would the schach theoretically provide shade?
No.
Yes. Ein tzarech l'schach. Doesn't mean it can't provide shade. You just don't need it. Because the tzlalim... What?
To provide shade. The shade provided...
It's capable... Let's say you took the walls away. In this scenario, right now, Rashi, would the schach provide shade?
Oh,
shit. Ein tzarech l'schach. You don't need it. Because the tzlalim agim says that, but the schach itself would provide shade. You just don't need it. You get it from another source. Continue. Mulakaman... Yeah.
What does that mean?
It means if you took the schach away, it would have no noticeable impact because the walls provide enough to shade everything.
Well, so, if everything is shaded, then nothing is being shaded by the schach.
I know, but if you took away the everything that was providing that shade, would the schach provide shade? And at this stage in Rashi, the answer is it would appear yes. Rashi doesn't say. Rashi says ve'ein tzarech l'schach. Read on a second, Zach. Go ahead. Unlakama muki plugtayu. So Rashi says the maskana, it's only if it's less than 4x4, why? Because less than 4x4, what does he say? Leko tzel schach el tzel shel tefanas.
And you think that's not the same thing as what you're saying earlier?
That's not what the words say.
I could
twist the words earlier if I really had to, but that's not what it says. The first time Rashi says, you don't need the schach. The second time Rashi says that there is no tzel of the schach. Zach, in the second part, you agree. He says there's no tell from the schach.
Yes.
In the first part, he says that tzlalim magiyin zelazeh, and therefore, not that he doesn't say there's no tell from the schach. He says there's no need for the schach. Now the answer is simple. At this point, so I'll tell you what I was bothered by when I read the Rashi, and now the answer is obvious to me. The first part of the Rashi, as explicitly so, is on the Havamina of the Gemara, right? That's the opening part. And then he says, "Lekam and Moki Plagai." He's just going to tell you, by the way, in the Maskana, what's going to happen? And I was quoting what's understood in the Maskana, right? So if I didn't have that, I would start to bend the first part and say, "Get me in Zarek Lasah." But it fits perfectly.
But how do you explain that? It's all in Magian Zelazeh.
What's that? No, I understand why. Let's say we're at the equator. So we'll put it on that Matthias. So underneath, it's true. Well, the truth is at the equator, it's not true actually. See, at the equator, when the sun is directly overhead, no matter how tall those walls are, if they are straight, if you take the anach, you take the plumb line, if they are straight and the sun is directly overhead, there will be no shade on the bottom of that sukkah. But the point is that the assumption that he's working with is that when you're at it's unnecessary. Even if the schach would cast shade on its own, directly beneath, because of the height of the wall and a little bit of the sun being off angle, so you don't, you get the shade, you won't have sun on the bottom even if you take away the schach, because the walls are enough to provide it. If you took away the walls and then you had the schach, it would provide shade on the bottom from the schach, but you just don't need the schach because you have the walls. At the end of the Rashi, he says, no, it means you mamish, in other words, and that would have been possible. That would have been possible. In the Maskana, that would, if you actually would get shade, based upon the angle of the sun and the schach, even though the defanos provide everything you need, it doesn't matter. As long as there's, in other words, as long as you can't say lekat sel schach.
In the sukkah?
In the sukkah.
That's the issue, is that the sukkah is so tall that when the sun hits the schach, it's
outside. Yes, it's exactly the point.
And that's only the Maskana.
That's the Maskana, correct. In the Havamina was, even if it would cast inside the sukkah, but
you don't need it because there's so much shade in the walls anyway.
Correct. And so I think it works nicely across the two parts of Rashi. Yeah, Ear.
Okay, so this is where I disagree with the Zera, and this is where I disagree with the Still.
Excellent, so I'm glad.
And I have two pieces of evidence.
As long as we amicably disagree, go ahead.
I have two pieces of evidence. The first piece of evidence is that when we say in Tzarech Tzach, Rashi, the immediately preceding Rashi, basically defines schach as in schach el ha'asui letzel. So to say that in sarach schach means in sarach schach letzel does not seem to me to be a natural...
Well, no, the answer is it's not asuya letzel, but in this case, because your tzel comes, we don't need it for the tzel. If, you know why it's not asuya
letzel?
Which means it's in a suya letel implies a purpose, right? So if it doesn't provide schach, if it just actually doesn't provide shade, you wouldn't say in a suya letel, you would say in a meitzel, right? Or lekatel. He says in a suya letel. Why is it in a suya letel? Because what purpose does putting the schach in there accomplish? You already have tel from the fanas. So you're putting it there because you like the architecture, not because the tel, because the tel you have already. That's perfectly consistent with the first half rashi. Next.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The second is, physically speaking, let's say theoretically I just took it that was, you know, these three, you know, 3x3 square tiles.
Okay.
So, shade is being provided either by a wall or by schach. Right? Is that the case? So
right.
If
or
the
both, of them, both of them could theoretically provide some.
How could that be? Physically speaking.
How could that be?
How could that be, physically speaking?
Well,
the sun is at one point in the sky, it's either hitting the schach. You know, at an angle in the floor, or seeing the wall.
What's bothering me? What's that?
Bounce light. There's still going to be light that the stock is shading. It's just not going to be the same amount as what it.
Okay, so now we're saying that, you know, when in Sof Sof, we mean in Sof Sof for part of the Sukkah, which is a different regular.
So I would say the following. I have to see if you can work this out. In a very tall Sukkah, I mean, you got to remember how distorted this is. This is a highly distorted. You know, we normally make our sukkahs wider and flatter, right? In a very, very tall sukkah, the sun could be overhead at such an angle where the schach, I think it's possible. Is it even possible? Is it possible? Is it possible? By the way, your question doesn't matter to the extent that Rashi's not grasping it anyway. In other words, if he's not, you're asking a very technical physics question here. Right, you're saying any given ray of light can only be blocked by one of the two things. But I'm not sure you're right, even. I'm not sure you're right. Now, you should be right. Positionally speaking, your kasha, by the way, remember, I think my reading of the Gemara is muchach because of Abaye's question from Ashtros Karnayim.
Abaye has a similar question in the next video, which you read differently.
I don't think you have an alternative reading for Ashtros Karnayim. Right?
No, I agree. I think the first claim is you need the sukkah to provide shade.
Yes.
What if the sukkah doesn't need to provide shade because it's in a certain location?
Yes.
Yeah. No, so we're describing the structure of the sukkah.
But I'm asking you, you're telling me that in any given sukkah, if the schach actually provides tzel for the sukkah underneath, then the fanos aren't providing the tzel. You're denying the possibility of the havamina. Right? You're saying to me that by definition, anytime, let's say we're outside the tropics. You're telling me that by definition, if the shade of the schach would cast down inside the sukkah, then without the schach, the walls would not, because the sun is too high overhead, the walls would not be blocking the sun.
Right.
So then Abaye never gets off the ground. By Ashtros Karnayim, what's the metzias?
The
metzias
is where you have a sukkah that, if there was no blockage outside of the sukkah, would cast shade onto the bottom of the sukkah. But there's a blockage that's very high up, hundreds of amun in the air. It happens to be a mountain, and it never gets sunny on this side of the mountain. So here's an example of a sukkah where you never benefit from the tail.
Right. So you're saying, so why can't you transfer that over to a sukkah? Because normally the walls don't go up higher than the sukkah, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, but it still doesn't. You know, the Abaye's question of Ashtaros Karnayim doesn't make sense. Because you're telling me there are only two possible metziuses. Either the schach, and leaving aside Ashtaros Karnayim, if you don't have an external thing, it's only the sukkah itself with the defanas. You're telling me that you either only can have tzel from the schach in the sukkah, And in which case, the Fanos would not be enough. Or the tzel from the schach outside the sukkah, and the tzel is coming from the defanos.
And you could also have a case where half of it is coming from the schach and half of it is coming from the walls, depending on the angle of the sun.
You mean angle from the sun at high noon, right?
Yeah.
Yes, but the question is, does it shade enough for a heksher sukkah or not? That's
right.
It. So it's a quantum point. It's yes or no. There's no in between.
Yeah.
So your question is a question on, really on the Gemara. It's not a question on my reading of the Gemara or Rashi.
I think that Abaye thinks what Rabbi Zera means is not that the sukkah needs to be built in such a way. He says that, Abaye thinks, Rabbi Zera thinks, there's a mitzvah to sit in the shade of the schach.
Right.
If there's a mitzvah to sit in the shade of the schach, then how could you ever build a sukkah near a mountain or any other shady location, or perhaps on a cloudy day, when you're not benefiting from the shade of the schach? And Rabbi Zera says, I wasn't commenting on the mitzvah of yeshiva sukkah being
okay, so you could, but you're not explaining Rashi, though. But you're reading the Gemara very differently than Rashi does. Rashi explains Reb Zera. You can disagree with Rashi if you want, but Rashi explains Reb Zera. And it's in the Gemara. It's in Reb Zera's statement. But if you just take Reb Zera's din, that you have to have tzel schach. And Abaye says, if that's the case, Ashkenazi would be right. But Reb Zera says more than that. He says, "Ad esrim ama adam yoshev b'tzel sukkah lemala me esrim ama ein adam yoshev b'tzel sukkah." Your kasha is on Reb Zera's description of the Matzias.
I don't think so. I think when you have a sukkah that's significant, that's tall enough, depending on where you are in the world.
Okay, but then what did Abaye understand him as saying? What was the question from Ashkenazi Karnayim? Your physics might be better, but I think you're going to get trapped by the words of the Gemara. So I might agree with you. I have to figure out how do you deal with the physical problem. But I think the reading of the Gemara and Rashi's reading of the Gemara is compelling. You can only really quibble now is whether I'm right about reading the two halves of Rashi. Okay. So I accept your question, but it's a broader question.
I'm so sure I agree.
In other words, it seems almost as if they assume the possibility, and again, this should not be a possibility, where if you took away the walls of the sukkah, there would be shade in the sukkah from the schach, and if you took away the schach of the sukkah, there would be shade from the walls.
I think you're wrong. I think that's not true. I think if you place, imagine you have the angle of the sukkah and the sun is here. Wouldn't you agree that each of these two will block some of the sunlight?
Yeah.
Just a different
part. But they won't overlap in their blocking the sunlight. The part that the sun blocks won't overlap with the part of the wall.
You need a secondary light source to get them blocked.
Right.
That's why when it's sunny outside.
The question I agree. So the question is the assumption that if you took away the schach in these cases, there would be enough tzel to make the bottom shaded, the hechsher sukkah. If you also had only the havaminas, you also only had the schach to be enough tzel. In other words, each one would somehow block a sufficient amount. But since you have the defanos, you don't need the schach. That's where I think we may have to go with this. I need some time to think about whether you can make this work in the realm of, partially, I'm not sure it's in the physical world, though it might already be in the halachic world. It might actually be not a physical question, it might be workable. Morty.
So, in your understanding of Rashi, what about Abaye's understanding changed from the Halamina of the Maskana?
Abaye thought that you have to get sale, you actually have to get Hana from the Schach. And the answer was, you only need the potential to get Hana from that Schach. I mean, that Schach built with a different kind of hechsher sukkah. Would that, in other words, take for example, let's say you have your 20 amma sukkah and you make the wall of translucent plastic, really transparent plastic. Will you have shade in the bottom of the sukkah? So the answer is yes. Abaye would not have challenged that, right? But that's not normally how they made sukkah. So he thought that Rabba was saying that since the walls are solid and they themselves would provide the shade, you don't, the sukkah does nothing for you. And Reb Zera says it doesn't matter whether the schach does nothing for you, it matters whether the shape, the schach could do something for you. In the Ashtaros Kanaim case, Tzchach does nothing for you because the Ashtaros Kanaim. But if you take away the Ashtaros Kanaim, the Tzchach will do something for you. So it's capable of doing it in the Sukkah. Your question's a good question here. I think it may be finessable. It might be. Okay. Next. Let's read Rava. Let's finish up by reading Rava. Okay, so here is the question. There are a couple of questions. Number one is, what is the drasha from? And number two, I understand Shivas Yamim, but, and number two, is an engineering question. Can you make a sukkah taller than 20 amos arai? It says, Ein Adam Oses Sukkas, Diraso, Diraso, Diras Keva. Those words themselves don't necessarily, are not clear. So Machlokas Arishon. It's a Machlokas Arishon. How might you read it? Lamala Ein Adam Ose Dirasa means he doesn't normally make it that way. Right? We say Ein Adam Ose Bilasa Bi'ilas Nos. It doesn't, firstly, that Chazaka unfortunately may not be as true as it once was. Although you have to understand what the Chazaka means. It can be misunderstanding. But when we say Ein Adam Ose Bilasa Bi'ilas Nos, it doesn't mean he can't. It means normally people don't. So the same thing could be said here. It will have an impact on how exactly you understand Rava. There's a passage in the Ritva about this. Okay, but for the moment, I just want to finish by trying to understand how does the Gemara see in this Diras Arai? So the we read normally Basukos Teshu Shavas Yamim is how many days you're supposed to fulfill the mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah. But that's not how Rava is reading it. Rashi explains, Shivas Yamim, go ahead, Zach. Sukkah shel Shiva, Vitulo. Right. So Rashi says, Basukos Teshvu Shivas Yamim, that the Sukkah should be one which is Roy for Yeshiva Shivas Yamim only. Only, that's what he says. No, I don't think so. No, that's the only time this explicitly. In other words, you might have assumed.
This is what we asked in the Memeshavach about Shiva, Rishona, Shiva, right?
No, that's about the Chag itself. That's not about. We might have thought that this Sukkah, there are 7 days of the Chag and 7 days of Mitzvah Sukkah, Yeshiva Sukkah.
Because of this Shiva.
Yes, I mean, because we had, look, because you have the entire Parsha, by Yom HaRish, you have Chag HaSukkos Shivas Yamim LaShem, and then Ulekachtem Lachem by Yom HaRishon, and then Basukos Teshu Shivas Yamim. So it's probably those two Shivas Yamims that they're thinking about. Okay, so then the response of Abaye was, Amar Le Abaye. Well, let's not go to Abaye. Let's finish Abaye tomorrow, and then we'll move on from there. Okay.